Blog Talk Radio.
And all access football exclusive.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to College Football Insiders Radio, powered by All Access Football. It is BCS Championship time, and that means we're here to talk college football. It is 5 p.m. You know what time it is. This is Joe Everett, your host, NFL Draft Bible Insider, and we are here to bring you the previews that you want to know, the championship game as well as the Cotton Bowl. We've got the Kraft Hunger Bowl, this bowl, NFL Draft Talk. But we've got some breaking news of the day we've got to get to before anything, and to help me break that on down is my mate, Mr. Dan. I believe that is the number on the switchboard. Dan, I got you on live. How are you doing today?
Joe, doing great, and pretty, like you said, pretty breaking news here today with the whole Andrew Luck thing. I mean, I think all of us, in the back of our minds, thought maybe he'll stay. Stanford kid, very intelligent, appreciates an education, has a father who's in college football, obviously the athletic director at West Virginia. This isn't a quote-unquote, you know, to use an old-school term, hardship situation where he needs the money. But deep down, I still thought he had to go. So I got to say, I'm pretty shocked and surprised that he decided to return to Stanford for at least another year.
No, I mean, it wrecks the mock drafts of more than a few gurus out there, but more importantly, turning down the NFL, it just shocks a lot of different people, and it affects more than one quarterback on this list. The first one I've got to ask you here, Dan, is what about Blaine Gabbert, who recently did declare the underclassman? How does he stack up, or do you see another quarterback, maybe like Cam Newton, working his way to the number one spot now?
Well, I think obviously right now it is much more wide open, and you almost wonder if Blaine had some inside information when he made his decision, right? Because it looks a lot smarter now with Luck gone. He's got a much better chance of being a top 10 pick now, maybe even a top 5 pick and a top quarterback on the board. He's in the race. I think, you know, like I said, it's more wide open. There's no clear-cut guy. And I think Cam is a sleeper in this whole thing. I thought so all along. Not all along, I shouldn't say, but as he was having this type of season. And now, Joe, this isn't to say that I believe Cam is worthy of being a top-10 pick myself, because I don't. But I think when guys have these types of college seasons, and particularly if they can cap it off with a big exclamation point at the end, which Cam can do, can he have a Vince Young-esque performance and really solidify himself, a Jamarcus Russell performance and really solidify himself? You know, remember, Vince Young heading into that Rose Bowl, it wasn't even a foregone conclusion yet that he would leave. There were still debates, would he stay, would he go? And then he had such a game where it was almost like he had to go. Well, we pretty much know Cam is going to go. You know, at least Daddy Newton will put his name in for the draft. We know that much. But, you know, I think with a big game, Cam is going to intrigue people with his physical ability, and he could end up going number one overall. I would not be shocked.
No, absolutely. And like you said, it's not our rankings. It only takes one GM out there to fall in love with a guy like that and his abilities. And he could go at that slot. But like you say, it is wide open with this QB class. And it opens the door for a lot of prospects, particularly guys like Locker or Mallett, who we saw play last night. I mean, the recent game there, the Arkansas strong-arm quarterback, I think that almost opens the door for him to be in consideration too, with I think probably the liveliest arm up this group.
Sure, why not? I mean, I think he's in the mix with the other two guys. I don't think, honestly, I don't know if I'd take any of the three in the top 10 myself, but you know, Mallett's in the mix. He definitely has the best pure arm of those guys, I believe, you know, and in terms of being able to just rifle one in and as well as show some touch and accuracy when he has a clean pocket. But, you know, while we saw some of those great throws and, you know, the announcers, you know, a couple times said, well, you know, he made a throw that no one else is going to make during that Sugar Bowl. We also saw a lot of his warts as well in terms of handling pressure. whether it be the actual physical pressure of the opposing team's defensive line getting in his face, which he did not handle well. He bounced a lot of throws in those situations, whether it was just dealing with his receivers making drops. And, you know, in fairness, they dropped about six or seven balls, including, a couple yeah. balls that could have been touchdowns in key spots. So you can feel it, but I kind of wish I didn't see as much of the frustration as I did. And then finally, the pressure in those late game situations. You know, we saw him, kind of choke away a game against Alabama earlier in the year. And this time, you recover the ball in the red zone, needing a touchdown to win with a little over a minute left. Come on, man, you got to come through there. And I know, once again, you did have a drop. The tight end Williams, who's going to be a player at the next level, had a big drop on first down. But that second down play, you know, I was texting with one of the guys here at Draft Bible. We were saying how he's struggling reading defenses. And, you know, we were at the time we were talking particularly safeties. But right there, he didn't read that zone blitz at all. You know, he didn't see that defensive end dropping off right into the passing lane, and he threw it right to the guy. And that's the type of stuff. I don't care how big your arm is. We've seen numerous guys come into the NFL with huge arms and fail, and that's the biggest reason. If he can't avoid making mistakes, that could be the something that's going to hold him back the next level. But, you know, at this point, we are talking potential with all these players, so Mallett is definitely in the mix.
Definitely not short of red flags, Mr. Mallett is, but we talk about
those
QB. Yeah, absolutely. There's worries that come with all of them, and there's upside included. What do you think about this first round of QBs now that Luck's staying in California there? How many QBs do fit in this first round conversation, in your opinion?
I think probably four will get in. You know, I've been a guy that, right after the game against Nebraska, I immediately wondered, wow, could have Jake Locker just gone from being, you know, a potential top 10 guy to not even a first round guy? Obviously, he's still kind of a borderline guy. I think right now, the three juniors that we've talked about, Newton, Gabbard, Mallett, are more solidified in terms of being first round picks. Locker is more of a borderline guy, but I still think he's got a good chance to kind of sneak into that first round, kind of the way Tebow did at the end. As you mentioned with Newton, all it takes is one GM, one coach who gets enamored with one thing or another regarding the quarterback and saying, yeah, I see the red flags, but I could fix those. And I think Locker is an easy guy in the off season to kind of fall in love with his physical abilities, because he really is very talented all around in terms of his arm strength, his athleticism, his ability to run with the football. One thing that would kind of concern me is when he kind of mentioned that early in the year that he almost wished he played safety in college so he could be more of a hitter and stuff. And I don't know if I want my quarterback thinking that way.
Yeah, even in the bowl game, going head first, bowling over two defenders in the end zone, questionable decision. I don't know that he'll be able to get away with that at the next level, Dan. I'll get you out of here on this, on the Luck conversation, and a lot of people are out there asking this very question. Did he make a mistake in returning? I mean, the injury worries, turning down the money. What's your opinion on Luck here? I mean, obviously, he's still the talent isn't going anywhere, but the risk of injury, does it have you worried?
Not as much the injury, is more of the potential change in the salary cap structure. I mean, listen, it's hard for me to say, Joe, I think he made a mistake. I mean, if that's what's in his heart and he wants to stay in college and have another year and get another year of that experience, and, you know, many people say it's the best time of your life and you're never going to get it back. So it's really, I hate to say he's making a mistake, but from a financial standpoint, it's hard to back up his decision. And, you know, earlier in December in the Washington Post, the president CEO, Mark Murphy of the Green Bay Packers, said, you know, a guy like Luck could be costing himself, you know, potentially $63 million overall in a contract and about $45 million guaranteed if there's a slotting scale introduced to the NFL draft, which obviously that's something that Goodell and the NFL owners want to do. And I think that's something that the current players are going to give. So I would be shocked if that doesn't come in. So that is big-time money to to give up and put out there. You know what I mean? A lot of people like to talk about Locker and how much did he give up. But I think when it comes to Locker, we're still kind of guessing. You know, we projected that he could have been the first pick had he come out last year, but that's something we don't really know. We don't know what would have shook out if he did declare. But I think we're pretty sure Luck would be the number one guy here, and it looks pretty clear that this rookie cap is going to come into place. And I think Carolina is the big loser in this whole thing. You know, I know they drafted Clawson last year, but I think if Luck was out there, they were going to pounce on him. I think Luck is, I'd say in the last, you know, 15, 20 years, the only guys that I liked as much were probably Peyton Manning, Carson Palmer, and Matt Ryan. I think Luck's the real deal. I think he's a slam dunk. And as we said with the other guys, there's some warts there with all of them. Luck's the one guy that basically had a clean face and really no problems. I think he was a surefire number one guy. So Carolina may be wondering what they're going to do here. But hopefully everything will work out for Luck. But it's definitely a big economic risk he's taken out there. And it's money that he's probably never going to recoup.
Yeah, no, absolutely, and live down to regret it, we shall see. But one thing you mentioned, Dan, the big loser being Carolina, I just pictured Jimmy Clawson doing a dance at his house when he found out this news. You know, he's got to be one of the happiest men in California, or Carolina, rather.
Yeah, add another L to the column for the Panthers. Oh, are they 2-14? Make them 2-15 now.
Yeah, exactly. Celebratory loss. Well, Dan, we appreciate you joining us. We're going to get to the bowl breakdowns, talk some more draft, but we will be checking in with you most likely next week, brother.
Great. Thanks a lot, Joe.
All right. Dan, the man joining us, as he always does, we are going to move on to the Cotton Bowl preview right now, and it is our great pleasure to join Mr. Beau Marchand, our man on the scene, that's right, on location in Irving, Texas. I've got him on the line. He's been waiting patiently, and just, Beau, I want to welcome you here. Thank you for joining us, first off.
Oh, no problem, Joe. Thanks for having me on. You know what? You could call Dan back, and I could just listen to Dan. I wasn't enjoying it. So, yeah, if you want to get Dan back on, we could both just listen. Dan knows his stuff, so.
Oh, yeah. He had to get in on this Luck talk. It is the biggest frenzy. And before we get into the Cotton Bowl, I mean, what's your take on it? Just real quick, as far as, is it a Mr. Luck? I mean, is he really going to miss out on millions here?
Yeah, you know, and the one thing I don't buy into the whole go back to play college. To me, he's a boy among men, or he's a man among boys, and I think he proved this year that, I mean, he was unstoppable. Everyone loved what he did. I don't think the plateau could get any higher for him, and I think him staying in school. I remember Bill Walsh talking about Michael Vick the same way. Just you're kind of hampering progress by staying in school. I mean, the quicker you leave, the quicker the NFL guys can get a hold of you and start fine-tuning everything that you do well and perfect it. So, and for me, I mean, Luck wasn't a sure. I mean, he was a number one type guy. But all of a sudden, everyone's talking he's the greatest guy since Elway in these rankings and whatnot. I'm not buying it. I'm not on the Luck bandwagon. I just don't like when a guy all of a sudden plays one season and he just kind of overshadows every single thing. I mean, look at what the Dolphins are offering Jim Harbaugh. You know what I mean? So everyone's in love with Stanford. They're in love with Harbaugh. They're in love with Luck. Not against Luck. I think he's a great kid. This is not a personal vendetta, but I would have preferred to see him coming out. And I'm still not sold that he's, you know, the quarter, you know, everyone's saying, oh, the greatest guy since John Elway. And he's just, you know, he's heads and shoulders. If he was that good, he would have been this good, you know, coming in. I mean, Jake Locker was the guy last year, and he stayed in school. What happened to him? So enough said, and, I like Ryan Mallett. I heard you guys talking. You know, a guy like that, Ohio State prides himself on defense. I mean, that's what they do. And, Cameron Hayward played lights out the other night. I mean, that was the Nam Da Kong Sioux type game. I mean, he was all in his face. So, I mean, you know what, Joe, tell me one guy, one quarterback who plays good when they're getting beat up like that. I mean, granted, he overthrew some balls. But, you know, when those guys are dropping passes like that, it's frustrating for anyone. And you might start trying to tweak things. You know, like, hey, Joe, I threw you 6 passes. Can you catch one? You know, so when I look at you again and you're open, I'm thinking, I have to make this so perfect. You know, your nerves are shot because you're, you know. So, like, I like Mallow all along. I think he's kind of been that guy. I think he's just kind of been that mainstream type guy. And I think when he throws the ball, I mean, I think it's like a fire rocket coming out. So I'm a Mallow guy over Luck if I was picking. But like I said, you know what, Mallow, besides Claussen, all these guys, Mallow, all these guys, I mean, you know, because you know Luck was going to be the number one guy. But that said, I mean, with Luck staying in school, I mean, all the quarterbacks that are going to be in this draft, all of them are going to make money off of Luck not coming out.
Yeah, I mean, I think he should be on their Christmas card list right now. Mallett should be considering that. Definitely have to gripe, though, on DeMarcus Love and the rest of his O-line. And that, like you said, I mean, Hayward's living in the backfield. But I digress. We are here, sir, to talk Cotton Bowl. You were going to be there. Give us your take on the game, who to watch, break down both sides for the folks.
Well, you know, I'm looking forward to this game. I think this is a very good game. I don't think, you know, it's not a BCS game, so it kind of flies under the radar, but you got two great schools. I mean, you look at the Big 12 South, the only team that didn't have a winning record was Texas. Texas for all the teams. So Texas A&M was successful in the Big 12 South. You have LSU. I think a lot of people were nervous when LSU started the season because they struggled against North Carolina because they had all those guys suspended. They ended up winning 30-24 at home. It was a real hard-fought game, but they ended up pulling it out. So I think people kind of got off the LSU bandwagon, were kind of hesitant to put faith in them. But they played great. They ended up going 10-2. I mean, you know, they beat Alabama. I still think Alabama was one of the top teams, even with the losses. I'd take that Nick Saban team against Auburn or Oregon and feel confident with my money there. But, you know, you got, I mean, besides that, I mean, I think the big key to look in this game is Ryan Tannehill. He took over for Jared Johnson midway through because Johnson had shoulder issues. Since then, they've won six straight, and Tannehill's just played lights out for them, and I think that's the big key going in. They've had some nice wins. I mean, you know, they beat Nebraska the second to last week at Nebraska, or, I mean, at home. They went on the road to beat Texas, and even though Texas struggled, I mean, still to go to Texas and beat them, I thought was a big win. So, I mean, two great schools. You got great guys. You got, I mean, number two on our NFL big board is Von Miller, the outside linebacker. The Buck is an award winner. He's going to be playing in the game. And then you have Patrick Peterson, the defensive back for the LSU Tigers, who, you know, some consider the next Charles Woodson. I mean, this guy could be a top five pick. So a lot of NFL talent, two great teams that are going to go out in the 75th annual anniversary of the Cotton Bowl. So, you know, it's a game I don't think, like I said, you know, for some reason, you know, I don't know if that, you know, you don't, boom, you know, Ohio State, Arkansas, you know, you know. But this Texas A&M LSU football game, I think, is going to really knock the socks off people.
I've got to agree, and it's because of the talent involved, especially Von Miller, who's going to be going up against Joseph Barksdale there, who's an experienced lineman. You want to see how that matchup plays out, but you brought up the guy that I think a lot of scouts are just salivating over right now, and yet another fellow who, you know, thanks, Andrew Luck. You just knocked out a draft spot for me. Patrick Peterson is going to be going up against Jeff Fuller. I think he'll have his hands full. There's definitely a good receiver for Texas A&M. How high, in your opinion, does Peterson go? I mean, the draft board's kind of set. You got Denver there, too. Baylor getting North Carolina at one. I mean, is it possible? I mean, some people say top five. Is that as high as you have one?
Yeah, I totally think it's a top five. And I think the NFL looks at past and, you know, it's a copycat league. And, you know, you look at Eric Berry and the success he had last year. A lot of teams are hesitant to pay that much money to a defensive back or a safety, a cornerback, a Joe Hayden, if you will, Eric Berry. Both of those guys had outstanding seasons. So I think when the NFL looks and everyone says, well, hey, you know what, they did it, we can do it. And then you get, a Patrick Peterson that's playing at the level he is. I definitely think, and if the NFL and the labor and the CBA all falls into place, which I do think it will, I don't think they're going to kill this thing. They're going to keep it going. If the draft is slotted, you're going to be able to see teams more willing to trade because, you know, they can say, well, you know, we're going to go draft Joe because this is how much Joe's getting. We don't have to worry about him holding out. We don't have to worry about this. This is how much Joe's getting done. So I think you're going to see a lot more movement. So, I mean, you look at those top five slots, you know, most of the time you kind of just look at need. And there's not a lot of movement. The guys are just stuck where they are. But with this new, I think with the way we're going to, you know, looking ahead and saying if this all happens, I think you'll even see teams that are really cornerback needy moving up to get a guy like Peterson because he's that good. And like I said, I think with Berry and Hayden, the guys from last year, you know, and there's been some, you know, the success I really think falls into place for the next year round. I mean, like, not to get off the subject, like a Vince Young. Vince Young was rookie of the year when he came out of Texas. The next season you have Jamarcus Russell. Everyone thinks, well, you know what, Vince Young can do it. Jamarcus Russell. Darren McFadden, Adrian Peterson. Peterson comes, blows up the NFL. This guy's like the Peterson type. What do? You know, granted, those were two Raider picks, too. So, you know, those are Al Davis type picks. But that said, I do think it's a copycat league. And I think with the success of these, you know, and I said, you know, Barry and Hayden, I think that the NFL guys, I think, look at Peterson. And they like, and then you got LeRon Landry coming out of LSU, too. I mean, the pedigree, he's been fantastic for the Redskins, a big hitter. So, you know, I think it falls in place. They'll start looking at that. And so Peterson, I definitely think, is a top five pick. Could go higher, but, you know, teams just don't like to place that, you know, that much into that type of position. You know, it's more about a position. Hey, we could get this left tackle and solidify this down instead of pay, you know, this cornerback this type of money. But with the pay scale and everything, Joe, I think you could see him maybe go as high as three, maybe as high as three.
No, absolutely. And it's just team need, like you say, how much do you want to pay this player? And talk about the paycheck and the dollars, but, well, we want the winners who you have in this Cotton Bowl. And then also with, like, your picks for the BCS National Championship game before we get you out of here.
Well, you know what? I like Texas A&M right now. I liked LSU all season long. To me, they kind of flew under the radar. They never really got any respect, and I thought they played pretty well. But that said, I'm going to go on a whim. I'm going to stay with Ryan Tannehill. I think that he's hot. I think Mike Sherman and what they're doing is very successful right now. So I'm going to say Texas A&M over the LSU Tigers. That's what I'm going to go there. And for the big showdown, I don't think the SEC is as good as it was the last few years. You know, the Floridas, the Alabamas, these couple teams from the last few years were just so much better than everybody else. So I'm going to take the Oregon Ducks. I liked them last year. And you know what, Joe? I never got over the Dennis Dixon, Jonathan Stewart team with Dixon when he blew his knee out. So I'm going back then. I'm giving it up for the Ducks, and I say the Ducks come out the favorite.
Not bad. And bear with me here. Do you think, and this is what I'm kind of looking at in this matchup, the SEC, the power team, going up against the speed and athleticism of Oregon, I'm almost of the opinion, does the time off hurt Auburn more than it hurts Oregon? What's your take on that?
You know, I think it hurts both teams to some extent, but I think that's a great point you bring up. Yeah, I think if it's going to hurt anyone, I do think it's going to hurt Auburn more than it is Oregon. And, you know, the layoff, and that's one, I mean, it is what it is, and it's not going to change. I mean, that layoff is just something happening. All teams, you know, have to get, you know, you can't be off for a month and, you know, pick up where you left off. But these are two great teams. You know, I think it's going to be a great BCS Bowl, and, you know, I think they're the deserving teams to be there. I don't think, you know, there's any rigmarole, you know, somebody didn't get in, you know, the top teams. But, yeah, great point. Yeah, I think for Auburn it will be a little bit more difficult just because of the style they play. But I think Oregon really is a better team. You know, just because they don't play in the SEC doesn't mean they can't be the best team. You know, everyone has to, you know, it's always, well, who'd you play all year long? I mean, you know, for a long time, the New England Patriots beat the heck out of everybody in the AFC East. The Jets, the Bills, and the Dolphins all stunk. But you know what? Playoff time, they still rolled everybody. So I'm not really concerned about, you know, your conferences and stuff. I mean, you know, granted, I don't want somebody from, the CIAA coming in and playing. But I think Oregon's a good football team. And, you know, I think they got I like them. I really do. I think the offensive weapons they have is just – so much. And you look what they did to Stanford. I mean, everyone loves Stanford. I mean, you know, Stanford could do no wrong. I mean, they were down at home against Stanford. They're getting pretty beat pretty good. And they just come out and they just went nuts on them. I mean, you know, what, they ended up scoring 50 some points, you know? So, yeah.
They can run. Can they run?
Yeah, so. And they got some good defensive guys on that football team, too. But it's like everything. When the offenses are so good, they just kind of overshadow everything. You know, the defense does. But their defense, you know. But Cam Newton's a great player. He's going to make it exciting. And, I mean, I'm excited to watch it. I mean, there's no question about it. You know, it's going to be a great game. You know, one real quick bit, too. Stephen Ridley, the LSU running back, got reinstated. He was ruled ineligible, but the NCAA reinstated him, so he's allowed to play. And he was first-team All-SEC, 14 touchdowns. So that's going to be a big boost for the LSU Tigers. Just I didn't want to not mention that, though, because that is a – you know, that's a, you know, you have your leading rusher, first-team SEC, not being able to play, but he got reinstated, so he will be available for tomorrow night's game.
Most definitely. The Cotton Bowl is going to be a great one, Bo, and we are honored to have you there. You have been listening to the great Bonostra, the Dolce Bonostra, which means sweet. I had to appreciate you, having you on, and you all out there need to keep your eyes peeled, because if you're listening to an NFL interview, a player interview, an exclusive, chances are Mr. Marchand will be conducting that interview. Thank you so much for joining us, Bo.
Joe, great job, and anytime, man. Have a great week, and like I said, next week we'll talk and find out how all this stuff went down.
Most definitely. Talk to you then, and folks, you think too, all this football, it's the College Football Insiders. We are breaking down the BCS Championship, previewing everything out there for you. NFL Draft News, you need to know. We will have Justin Van Vulpen on shortly, as well as Kelron Sykes, Super Scout, Pac-10 guru. And before we do any of that, we've got a lot of news. Not that Andrew Luck deciding to stay at Stanford isn't big enough news. Oh, no. Not to be overshadowed, Mr. Matt Reynolds, offensive tackle, BYU, the junior, is going to go ahead and stay in school and block for young Mr. Jake Heaps, quarterback. I think probably a wise decision, looking more like a right tackle as opposed to a blindside protector. Might, you know, not fit in there another year at school. Maybe a good decision. As you know, NFLDraftBible.com is where you need to go to check out the latest underclassmen to declare, all the juniors, the redshirt sophomores. And folks, we have late breaking news. Yes, they keep coming in. The show must go on, and the news has to keep pumping. J.J. Watt, the junior from Wisconsin, defensive end, had a huge bowl game, a big-time performance, will be declaring for the NFL draft, decided to forego his last year of eligibility. The guy is a definite first-rounder, former tight end recruit in Central Michigan, lost a year, transferred over, switched positions, dominated 10 last year, second only lost behind Ryan Kerrigan of Purdue. Definitely a great decision. Might be more of a five-tech type, but defensive end in a 3-4. Big guy, almost like an Aaron Smith clone of the Pittsburgh Steelers. If you fans are out there listening, you may recognize him, but he'll be wearing a Wisconsin uniform. The Virginia Tech running backs, Darren Evans and Williams, both have decided to enter the NFL draft. Ryan Williams, borderline first rounder, dealt with the hamstring injury. Obvious, big-time talent, great hands out of the backfield. I'd say a guaranteed second rounder at this point. You never know what postseason workouts will hold. Darren Evans, a guy who basically had the show stolen from him by Ryan Williams after an ACL injury. The Warren Central graduate, that's right, east side of Indianapolis is where Darren Evans hails from, four-time state championship team representative. The guy was unstoppable in high school, had a great hockey career. He's taken it to the pros as well. Definite mid-round pick, but a solid back. 235, breaks tackles at will. Pleasure to watch him play in high school. Can't wait to see him put on a uni in an NFL stadium near you. We are waiting for Mr. Justin Van Vulpen. And then also we're going to have on Kelron Sykes. Get a little round table. NFL draft discussions for the games coming ahead. But we are not done with underclassmen declaring. No, the list goes on. Will Hill, the safety from Florida, also decided to go ahead and make it official. He is going to enter the NFL draft as well. And the last one, Zane Parr, defensive end from Virginia, and likely a late rounder, not an elite pick by any means. But, you know, just because Andrew Luck decides to stay in school, it doesn't mean that has to overshadow the rest of the NFL draft news. So also just want to remind you folks, you can keep track with the Underclassmen Tracker, hosted by yours truly. We're going to be adding those that we recently check it all out at NFLDraftBible.com. It's the place to be. If you want to stay in the know, folks, that is where, you know, it's College Football Insiders Radio. We're breaking down the bowl games that are to be. What are you looking for, Justin Van Polk? Little draft talk. Talk about the Compass Bowl. Break down some of the matchups there. Players to watch. NFL draft eligible. Obviously, you've got guys like Jabal Sherrd, the defensive lineman, now pretty much the DL to watch thanks to a Greg Romeus injury. But be that as it may, Sherrd is a man-child, definite great hand strength. He's got the bull rush, developing some moves this year, really showed his wares. It's a guy you've got to be aware of out there, and probably more of a 4-3 end. I don't know that he's got the size, if he's fitting in that 3-4 just yet. Another guy, I like him. I don't know that he's a left tackle, but you have to look at Pinkston there. I believe he is the cousin of Todd Pinkston, former Eagles wide receiver, if folks remember him. A little highly more touted and, of course, larger than his cousin. Has a chance, I think, to be a good swing tackle. Definitely teams will be looking at him, potential guard in some situations. But breaking down the rest of this Compass Bowl, it's Pittsburgh. It's Kentucky. You have to wonder about the mercurial wide receiver, Mr. Jonathan Baldwin, made a bold statement declaring for the draft only a day later to retract that via the school, saying that he meant nothing against his former coach and teammate. As it may, a player to watch in the Compass Bowl just for the simple fact that can he get open? Is he going to go out with a bang? And more importantly, will he finally make it official? Will he declare? And on the other side of the ball, a player on the rise, 2-0, running back Derek Locke, scat back more than anything. Some people call him a McCluster, Red Bush type. I'm not so sure about the explosion there. He does have that legit game-breaking speed in his arsenal. So it's a player to there really rising up draft boards. And scouts talk. They like to put these guys up a little higher than they should be, possibly, but definitely a mid-round guy that you have to consider. And also wide receiver Matthews, the player on the outside, that's going to be another player just heading into his senior season there, starter for looks like 3 years, of super sized type guy, just about the same size as Baldwin, not the same speed or athletic ability, but definitely a player to know. You've got to keep your eyes on him as you're watching this game. And just to give a pick for the game, since, you know, that's what's on schedule, and I'm not going to let you folks down. I think it's got to be Pitt. They get the run game going, Pinkston and the boys blocking for Deion Lewis. And really, Kentucky's got enough without their QB. Speaking of bloodlines in the NFL, Mike Hartline and Brian Hartline are probably not too happy about this. But before we move on, Greg Romeus, the player that we will not be seeing him in this game, obviously, but he's something to note that due to injury, back issues, ACL tear, it's just been definitely a season of woe. And we talk about players that they should have entered the draft last year. Romeus is going to be a guy, along with possibly Jake Locker, or maybe even Chris Ponder, regretting that decision. Where does he fall now? I mean, unfortunately, you've got to be giving him a mid-round grade at this point. I'm not going to say that it's like a fall epically of George Selvey last year, a South Florida prospect, but at the same time, Romeo's stock is drastically hurt. I'd say fourth round at this point, and the question mark still remains if he will check out medically. It's just such a shame. 2009, he's no defensive player of the year, and we don't even get to see him in the bowl, but a name not to forget. So again, Mr. Romeo's, we haven't forgotten about you. Roundtable discussions on tap. Things we wanted to get out there, matchups from these other games, and I'll just go ahead and kick it off here. As far as the matchups in the Kentucky-Pittsburgh game, big time, it's got to be Sherd against some of those Kentucky linemen. You want to see him get in the backfield, live in the backfield. The other bowl game I'm very much looking forward to would be the Kraft Fight Hunger Bowl here. Boston College, Nevada. We're going to San Francisco for that one. Nevada's probably the favored in this matchup, but ultimately there are some very highly sought after players here. No Montel Harris, running back, unfortunately, but be that as it may, eyes will be glued. Scouts will be salivating over Mr. Anthony Costanzo, the left tackle there for BC. Much along the same lines of all these Eagle tackles, a bigger guy, brute strength more than anything, not as mobile. I'm not going to call him Mark Colombo, or I'm not going to go as far as Jeremy Trubut, another Indianapolis native, but Stanzo has first-round potential, and much as people like to criticize this tackle position this year and the class that will be incoming, it isn't necessarily as bad as is once perceived. You still have guys that I don't know that Karimi is as bad as some make him out to be. You have Sherrod from Mississippi State. You have guys like Anthony Costanzo, who I think a team at the second half of the first round possibly will be getting a player. And what you want to watch in this game against Nevada is the Nevada, they have a tremendous edge rusher in Dante Moak. The guy is an athletic phenom. Rumors of him having a 4.440. Once again, these are things that remain to be seen. I'll believe it when I see it, but when a guy is in that type of conversation and has the numbers and some of the performances he's put up, you have to take note of Dante Moak. And Costanzo, he has been known to struggle with speed and edge rushers, and that's definitely another aspect that you have to consider. How does he handle getting to the outside? Is Moak already in the backfield? And, of course, you also want to see him dominate in the run game, because, really, they don't have the size to contend with him. Should be a good performance by Costanzo. Draft Bible people will be watching. You can guarantee that. And finally, moving on to some more of the topics we had scheduled for the roundtable, just the offensive prospects outside of Costanzo, maybe to keep your eyes on in these games. And I mean, outside of Baldwin and Derek Locke, not terribly excited. Another guy, I mentioned him earlier in the show, Jeff Fuller, the Texas A&M receiver, certainly a guy to watch. And then Oregon, I'll just do the sneak preview, obviously, before we get Cleotis on to talk Oregon Pac-10 and the BCS National Championship preview. A little exclusive on those Ducks because, yes, we have an expert coming on. Speaking of those Ducks, though, a big-time fan of Jeff Mail, the senior wide receiver. And, you know, it's one of those guys that he doesn't knock your socks off in any one area of consistency. He's got the Sticky Fingers Award. And my prospects, you know, I look at him every year. I usually give out a Super Glue Award, formerly won by Austin Colley last year, held by his teammate at BYU, Dennis Pitta. Well, I'll just give you guys the sneak preview. Yes, Jeff Mayle, Sneaker Award for the Super Glue Trophy this year's draft eligible prospects. The guy rarely makes a drop. Very good route runner, plays his position well, knows how to make that extra space against his opponent. It's not speed. It's not athleticism. It is more by his cunning and wit that he knows how to get open. And we'll definitely be asking Cleotis about Mr. Jeff Mayle and some of the other Oregon prospects in the big game. And also can't throw out Middle Tennessee. I mean, we would be remiss if we didn't touch on a little Miami, Ohio. Middle Tennessee, really not a lot of great players that will be playing over at Ladd Peebles Stadium in Mobile, Alabama, where we will have some NFL Draft Bible staff on location for the Senior Bowl. And what now? Less than 2 weeks. That's right. You heard right. It is that close. More than anything, though, Middle Tennessee does have an edge rusher. He's a defensive end, smallish, will probably transition to outside linebacker. It's Jeremy Lattimore making some plays on the edge. Definitely something to look for when that game. Last one for me, I'd say Terrence Tolliver, senior at LSU, a guy's draft stock just could not fall any further down the rung. I mean, he's got the super size. He's been known to be very athletic. I mean, should be winning jump ball situations left and right, and just a subpar, lackluster senior season, really, when he's going to the draft and will be amongst, in my opinion, a great class. This was an inopportune time to turn in a dud, Mr. Tuck. So, unfortunately, there in the last roundtable topic, I want to get the underclassmen that have declared, the guys that have already gone out there and said, "Yeah, I'm in it. I'm going to declare. I'm an agent. There's no going back now." And players that, you know, have made a mistake at this point, and I've got to put them on the spot. It's not always roses. You don't always come out all of a sudden and just get drafted high. I mean, it's hate to tell you, but I'm looking at the guy, and it's really – it's Vasquez there, the USC kid. Hazleton is his last name, former USC Trojan, transferred – lost a lot of years, 2 years, I believe, eligibility, thanks to an injury and his transfer. ACL tear, decided to go ahead and give it a go in the draft this year, missing his last opportunity at Cincinnati in what was expected to be a big-time season for him. 6'2", got some great size, and out of the New York area, but apparently he's going to give it a go to draft. And I think it's a late round grade at this point. And the last one I'll touch on would be DeAndre Brown, Southern Mississippi there, the Golden Eagle. He's a monster, super-sized wide receiver at 6'6", but with the injury woes, and you want to talk about a subpar season, a guy that missed 7 games with a lower leg injury, and lo and behold, it's the same leg that he separated in a bowl game his freshman year. The guy started out like gangbusters. A great career there for him. It was what was to be expected. The last two seasons have just been a dud. I think that's another guy that really would have benefited from another year in school. I can't count him out. There's some scouts out there right now saying he could be the value of the draft this season, much akin to Mike Williams. Tampa Bay gets him in the 4th round. Carrier concerns have to be their leading wide receiver and a rock for their franchise at this point for certain. Some of the questions, players to watch, and there's an intriguing fella that plays for LSU. You all love him. His name is Drake Nevis, interior lineman. The big criticism is his height. He does not have prototype size, but you have to look at this player and the will to want to win. He does it so well. He plays so well. And you have to like what he does. Now, certainly, he does not fit in a prototype NFL 3-4 defense. You want the guys with the supersize and the strength and the ability to own their man opposite them, which I still think Nevis has. And don't be surprised if he doesn't fit into a 4-3 defense as a smallish under tackle because of how active he is. He stays active with his hands, with his great movement and pursuit. You can't underestimate a relentless motor, which I think Nevis has, and you're going to see teams like the Colts, potentially the Panthers if they keep their 4-3, and also I wouldn't put it past a Chicago Bear team that likes linemen just like that. They will have a place for young Mr. Nevis. And also the last few draft conversations before we get Cleotis, the Duck, Floyd, a former defensive tackle from Colorado State, covering the Oregon Ducks. The guy knows the team inside and out. He's going to give us the skinny on what to expect from this game. Still have to talk about Mark Herslick. I like what he's done this season. How can you not like the kid coming back from what he's done, overcoming all the obstacles, and really, I think a bonus for him has been the time off and no. That's what you do need. His system, the rehabilitation, he can only get stronger from here. And really, the senior was a highly touted prospect before the entire cancer thing and beating it. But at the same time, it doesn't mean he can't climb that ladder back up to the higher rounds. It's not beyond any belief. And you have to believe in the guy, especially overcoming, like I said, what he has. Big-time player with a big-time game. Definitely going to be watching him in BC. The last one I want to talk about is LaMichael James. And we talk about so much the players that declare for the draft early, and then we just talked about Luck staying. We talked about Matt Reynolds staying. They're saying young LaMichael is to stay at Oregon. Probably a good decision, as I think the guy's got to add a little weight. 185 right now. Definitely wants to put on a little more pounds. Hopefully it does not affect his speed. And lo and behold, as I talk Oregon Ducks on the switchboard, I see a 206 area code. I am venturing to guess that this is the one and only Cleotis, the Duck, Floyd. Cleotis, I should have you on. First off, thank you very much for joining us on College Football Insiders Radio.
Thank you very much for having me.
Well, it is a pleasure, and we love the college football, so I want to go ahead and let you do your thing and break down some of the Ducks we're going to see, who to watch for, and what you're expecting to see.
I definitely expect this game to be very high scoring. I think if you watched the Rose Bowl last year, you saw that Oregon is capable somewhat of handling a quarterback similar to who plays like Terrell Pryor. They did poor tackling last year somewhat, but I do think they'll be much more prepared this year. Their defense is a little faster. For instance, they have a kid, Poseco Lacombo. I actually did some work with this kid in high school, and he played soccer his whole life. I believe he's from, like, Congo. So he's a guy who can run. He was actually recruited to play receiver, but now he plays linebacker. So you'll see a lot of Poseco Lacombo. You'll see a lot of Josh Kadu. Both of these guys are guys that probably run in about the, I would say, NFL time 4-7 range or so, but very athletic linebackers. Be sure to watch out for last year's freshman All-American safety, John Boyette. He covers ground like no other. And definitely watch out for Cliff Harris. He's just an electric kid, runs back punts, plays a deep ball very good. Offensively, just look for LaMichael James to get going. Oregon, Chip Kelly loves trickery. He loves going for it on fourth down, even when it's on his side of the 40-yard line. So I expect Oregon to take some chances and gamble a little bit. based off they know they have the best offense in the country and they can give up a score or two. So I do just look for Oregon to run that ball and score almost every possession. That's what they do all season. And you have four downs basically to get 10 yards, so it kind of works in their favor.
I like the breakdown, and you brought them up. I've got a list of players that I was going to grill you on, Cleotis. And first off is Cliff Harris. Definitely, I see a lot of potential in this kid. There's return ability, but the speed and reaction skills he's got. Is this the next great Ducks DB in a long line? I mean, you've got this just history of phenomenal defensive backs, Patrick Chung, Jarius Bird, the T.J. Ward kid that just got drafted. I mean, you could just keep naming him. Harris seems to be of that ilk. What's your take on his pro prospects?
Well, he's very electric. He's also a people person. I would say that's one person in Eugene who probably gets the most attention. Fans love that kid. He's very young. He's kind of raw. But that's kind of what you look for in a cornerback, somebody who can make a play on the ball when it's in the air. You know, you can coach somebody to do something so many times, but when that ball's in the air and it's one-on-one, he's really good at knocking that ball down. A little undersized, but very, very aggressive and has a lot of speed. I think he's a kid who will keep developing, and I think his special team play is that much more of a bonus. So I look for him probably, you know, to go early to mid-rounds when he's ready to come out. Again, like to see him bulk up a little bit and get better at tackling. But he's a kid who didn't really come into the starting position until like mid-season. You know, they kind of slowed him in the rotation, and now he's full going. And also Thomas Jackson, I believe he was a first-team All-Pac-10 selection. So also, you know, he's a guy who we'll see on Sundays also too.
Now, you brought up the lightning in a bottle, LaMichael James. And, you know, we talked about earlier his decision to return to Eugene. And now, granted, these kids have been known to change their minds once or twice or three times. But what's your take on LaMichael coming back? Do you think it's a good decision? And almost it's tough to imagine leaving a paradise like the facilities over at Eugene. They do have some nice stuff going on there. The kids got it made, but thoughts on James returning for 2011?
I think it's a good idea, just based off of his size. I think if he leaves this year, I still think he's one of the first backs to go. But again, he's a young kid. He's a sophomore. He's a little bit underweight, but he's ridiculously fast. He won the 100 in the state of Texas, which is probably the fastest state in America. So, I mean, I think him coming back next year with the team they have returning, he has his name out there now. Next year he's going to be, you know, probably the forerunner of college football. Again, I just expect him to have a really big season. He ran for, 1,700 yards this season, and he missed a game. So I'm actually looking for him to get close to 2,000 yards next year if he plays the full season. There's a few games this year, too, where, you know, they took him out and started giving the ball to a different other running back. So he's a guy I can see having 2,000 yards in college football next season.
A player to watch and probably a great decision. Being a Duck is not bad, but the guy I've got to ask you so much in NFL draft conversations, it's the bloodlines, the lineage, and you've got a Matthews over there and a little bit more highly touted high school prospect than his older brother, Clay Matthews. So I'm talking about Casey. I think the guy's got tremendous skill, not just as a tackler, not just as getting into the backfield. No, he has good coverage ability. That's definitely a guy I've got to say. I mean, it's easy to say, oh, the bloodline, he's going to be a great pro, but this guy's got game too.
Oh, he has a lot of game. If you, I went to the Civil War game where they played Oregon State, and he damn near knocked the quarterback out in the first play of the game. He's a guy who was square up and hit you. He drops back in the zone really good. You can tell he's been well coached. Again, coming from that lineage, I'm sure he's had the best coach in his whole career, and you know, going up against his brother and things like that. A very smart player, one of the leaders on defense. Another guy I would like you to keep an eye out for is Kenny Rowe. He led the Pac-10 in sacks last year. I think he's second right now in the Pac-10 in sacks. And the guy's a little undersized, but just gets going. He's from the same high school as Mercedes Lewis and Deshaun Jackson, Long Beach Poly. They actually have the most NFL players out of any high school in the country. So he comes from a good bloodline, too. I expect him to probably show up out of all the defensive linemen. The guy just gets after it, and he gets sacked. I think he had 4 sacks last year against Terrell Pryor. So look for him to, you know, be the guy to get the defensive line going.
Yeah, the Long Beach Poly and the Booker T. Washington down in Miami. I think those are the rivals for most NFL athletes. And the last one before we picks for this game, Jeff Mayo, the wide receiver, I just brought him up. I mean, the consistency, I had to say, I mean, I think he's got some of the best hands in the draft. And no, is he going to be a future wide receiver? I'm not so sure, but in the long line of guys that you see come out of the woodwork, like look at guys like Blair White. I mean, kind of reminds me of that. He's got the size. He's got the reliable hands. So this guy's going to be a pro in my mind.
I think so, too. I had the privilege of playing against Austin Colley in college. I mean, just watching him in college, you could see that he had the potential to go to NFL, and he actually just ended up getting in a good system and doing really well. Mayo's a guy who definitely comes to work every day. You know, he puts in a lot of time in both the weight room and studying film. And not only that, but there's no better measure, in my opinion, of how a prospect will do in the NFL than looking at the game film. And he's a guy who shows up when there's definitely big plays. They go to him in the air. So I look for him to have a huge game on his way out.
Absolutely. I mean, the league turning into a passing game, more and more teams leaning there. You need receivers all over, especially they talk about 18-game season and all these injuries. Guys like Mayo is showing up before you know it. Last one, Cleotis, you got to give me the picks. I want the winners. How does this game turn out in your mind? A final score and just how is Oregon going to beat Auburn or vice versa?
All right. I'm not biased, but I'm going with the Ducks. I just think they're going to do a great job on national TV. SEC teams don't like to be spread out, which is why you saw Florida do so well in the SEC, and now you're seeing Auburn do so well. They spread these other teams out, and they have success, and nobody spreads people out like Oregon. They're going to get them in space, make them tackle one-on-one, get that high-tempo offense going, go for it on fourth down. Cam Newton's going to do his thing, definitely. You can't shut him down, but you can, you know, get some big plays on them. And, you know, I think Oregon is going to get their offense clicking and going. And we're actually going to see how good Oregon's quarterback is. He's a guy who flew under the radar for a little bit. This is his first year actually starting, really. But he's a great quarterback, too, and a lot of times that's being overlooked. So now we're going to get to see two quarterbacks who can both run the ball and throw the ball. I got Oregon to win by 10 points. I don't know the final score, but I'm saying Oregon by 10 points.
I like it, and if that had to be my pick, I mean, just looking at the game, looking at the speed and the athletes, I just think you've got to give Oregon a shot. This could be the year the SEC gets dethroned. Big-time game, and we covered it for you in a big-time way. Cleotis, can't thank you enough for joining us. Before I get you out of here, you want to tell the folks a little about something you're doing, where they can find your work, and what you've got on tap?
Right now, actually, I'm in law school at the University of Oregon. I spent almost 7 years working for Rivals.com. Right now, I'm helping out with College Football Insiders. I love the game. I actually tutor a lot of the, you know, Oregon players and Washington players. I have strong football ties, and I'm actually going to law school to work for the NFLPA or be a sports agent. So whatever my journey is, it's going to be football related. If you need to reach me, you can actually reach me at cfloyd@uoregon.edu. Thank you.
Outstanding. And once again, that was Cleotis Floyd, and we will be talking to him again soon. It is always NFL draft season here at NFL Draft Bible. You have enlisted College Football Insiders with me, Joe Everett. That's right, your host. You heard it here first, and we're going to be bringing you NFL draft news, game coverage, interviews, everything. Player spotlights are firing up fast and furious, and we've got those all-star games. We will be bringing you exclusive coverage. You know where you need to go to stay in the know. It's NFLDraftBible.com, powered by All Access Football. Enjoy those bowl games, folks. Stay safe and stay classy. See you next time.